Blog Talk Radio. Hello and welcome to Storyboards with Esther Cohn, brought to you by a team of voices. A team of voices is a group located on allpoetry.com, largest poetry site in the world. It is also sponsored by AP Taylor, and thank you to both him and Deborah Lee for running the group and the Blog Talk page so we can speak out live. I am your host, Skye. And tonight on Storyboards, we will be celebrating The Warlock, Storyboards Forgotten Realms, class of volume number, I think we're on 8. Yeah, 8. So getting lost. We are actually close to nearing the end of the class, I believe. I think I only had a handful more. It's a venture that I started a while ago. Starting with the races, so I'm happy to continue the D&D poetry. Of course, we have some extra poems that were carryover from another show, which was to the extreme. So I have a couple of those carried over here for tonight. So if you're wondering why your poem is being read, it is because it is carried over from another show. So without further ado, I'd like to talk about the music, and I thought, well, who was a great warlock, and what kind of music could I bring in? And, of course, I had to go with The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom, that one was, and it was Ganondorf's song, and, I mean, he was a great warlock, can't argue that. And the Tears of Kingdom is a 2023 action-adventure game developed by published by Nintendo. For the Nintendo Switch, the player controls Link as he searches for Princess Zelda and fights to prevent Ganon from destroying Hyrule. And there were a couple different artists who were on this album. They are all Japanese, so I'm going to do my best. I don't know. I don't even know if I'm going to – I'm probably going to butcher it, but – Tsusaka Usu, I don't even know if I want to do it. Hajime Owaka, yes, that's terrible. We got some. I'll tell you some more about the game. Oh no, there's only one more. Okay, thank goodness. Okay, and you. Oh my gosh, yes, Taka Tech. It's hard. I don't know how to say it, guys. The Tears of Kingdom was conceived after the ideas of Breath of the Wild downloadable content had exceeded its scope. Development had led by Nintendo's Entertainment Planning and Development Division by Breath of the Wild director and producer reprising their roles. The developers were inspired by social media posts to create gameplay mechanics that encouraged experimentation and sometimes struggled to differentiate the sequel from its predecessor. A teaser was shown in 2019, while the full reveal featuring gameplay was shown in 2021. And they have, I don't have a Nintendo Switch, but they have, I really, really wanted it. And I was thinking about getting one, and I can't justify the cost right now. Couple hundred, but they had the Tears of the Kingdom game case that came with, so if you got the Switch, it would be with the template on the actual Switch of Tears of the Kingdom, and it is unbelievably gorgeous. Maybe I'll put a photo up on the board, but I was so excited for that game to come out, but I was also really excited. I was like, now's the time to stop borrowing my friend's Switch and to get my own. I was just like in love with this. But yeah, so without further ado, I would like to invite on a few people, and he's going to really find this funny because I was very slick and very quick. All right, here we go.
You have no power here, Gandalf the Grey.
Back and tour.
That's
were you just
awesome.
Telling me when you were on? What were you just telling me when you were on mute? I have no power.
I have no power. I have no such power.
I was like, that was the quickest I ever put something in the studio before. I thought you'd like it. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Half a rack is
great.
Better than no rack.
Okay. Were you laughing at my struggle here? Japanese name. I know, it was
oh my
rough.
God.
I'm not gonna. It
yeah.
was rough. We also have someone else here, and this isn't what I usually press for him, but I'm just going to press it because I just want to press some buttons. So here we go.
Lemonation!
That always makes you laugh. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm so happy you can make it. I'm sorry for late notice. It was just a switch and a change. That's why we have some extra poems on here from a different show. So I appreciate you being flexible. And I know that you cannot stay for very long, so I want to make sure that I get you right up here. And here we go. all right, how's it going, Stephen, by the way? I miss you.
Been going, I guess. I mean, some things improve while other things deteriorate, and I don't know, we're just making the best of every day, and I keep writing as much as I can, and as best as I can. I wanted to say this, though, your butchering of those names did make me think of the ending credits of all the Metal Gear games, because that's about what the names look like on that, too.
I thought I could do better than that, but I was like, oh, this is a struggle, and this is terrible. It's just awful. All right, well, you brought me a D&D poem, which I'm super excited about, and you have the floor.
All right, and I know you like me to try to bring everybody up to speed on where we are, and in the last chapter of Argo, A Hero's Story, chapter 16, they faced off against a corpse eater, and they met a new friend named Eric, a fighter. And so I always start off the next chapter with a brief bit of the end of the last chapter. So this is Argo, A Hero's Story, chapter 17. Zax patted Eric on the back. "An excellent showing of your fighting skills," he complimented, then looked around at everyone else. "Now let's get to our beds," he smiled, "for tomorrow we start our crossing of the mountains." Argo glanced at the smoldering body of the corpse eater and breathed a sigh of relief. High up in the branches of a dying pine tree, a raven perched on a branch and watched the group disappear down the path out of the cemetery. He had been sitting there and witnessed the entire battle. Now, to finish his task, he had to fly back to the northeast, back to the woods, back to the warlock who had bid him to follow the corpse eater and observe it in its charge. The warlock had a particular interest in the young man who had trailed behind the rest of the group, but the raven wasn't sure why. He had put a spell on the beast and sent it to intercept him, and now the blackbird had returned with bad news. It squawked, shook its feathers, and flapped its wings, taking to the night sky. It knew it would be flying over the Lort mountain range and a good distance after, before arriving in those woods that used to be a peaceful place until he arrived. The dental wood used to shelter the homes of loggers and their families. Fairies and herds of deer frequented the area, but he came with his yipping and biting soldiers and wiped out anything that leaned towards the light. And there he sat and waited. He sat deep. Series of underground caves. Some of the caves were formed by nature, while others were dug by the legions of dogmen that had come into his service. He knew they hated being called dogmen. They called themselves kobolds. He had known of their existence, but there were no kobolds in his homeland of Kobold. He found them to be dirty creatures, dirty but loyal. He wished to return to Colchis, but his daughter and her murdering husband had brought him here, and he would not return until his dead son was avenged. It had been 4 days since he dispatched the raven to bring him news, and he anxiously awaited news of the young man's demise. Somebody cooking on the microwave?
Anyway. Mommy?
Sorry. The kobold's pack leader stepped into the room and bowed. Come this way, Krigrik, the warlock motioned with his hand. Sir, Krigrik growled, the raven comes. The warlock grinned as he watched the raven fly in. It landed on his shoulder and moved its beak near his ear. It began quietly chirping, squawking, and whistling. The warlock's head drooped upon hearing what he didn't wish to hear. Bring her in here, Krigrik, he mumbled to the floor. The kobold left the room. The raven followed him out. A few minutes passed, and Krigrik returned with a woman dressed in rags and bound in chains. Her skin was dirty and showed evidence of bruises and bite marks. Krigrik yanked on the chains, forcing her to kneel. Well, my daughter, the warlock rumbled, your son has passed yet another test. Please, father, she begged, please listen to me. Please end this madness. You and your husband murdered my son, he growled, and I will not stop until I have murdered yours. This I swear on my name, Aetes, King of Colchis. End chapter.
Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Sorry, that sound is my heater. It's broken, and it sounds like an airplane taking off. And I had gone near it to turn off the heat, so I apologize. And I thought I was on mute, and I was getting a drink because my throat was kind of hurting. So I do apologize. I usually mute myself. I thought this was brilliant. I loved how you introduced it with the raven, how it was in his, like, I don't know, it's just those tiny details, because it's almost like you could actually see it in, like, a movie form. Like, if someone was going to take this story and put it to a film, I could actually see the raven perched high on the branch. And then, of course, it's going back to its master. And I like how you were, kind of went through his plight. I'm sorry, my throat is just a little... With the interest of the young man who had trailed behind the rest of the group. And I like how you give the personality, like, but the raven wasn't sure why. Like, this is an intelligent creature. And I love that you did that. I love that you full-fleshed that beast and really made it part, made it its own character. And I always feel like if you do, like, a animal friend or a beast in the game, I feel like you should really develop that as well. And I definitely, you've done that here. I love that you brought in the kobold. I was watching this, like, YouTuber. He's brilliant. I forget his name now. I'm sorry. I can't plug him. But he does all these different – he helps you put together, like, basically epic stats on paper, like, not character background, but just the stats on, like, what race and what – class to kind of put together and how to really max out what you can do. And he does great multi-classing as well. And multi-classing can be really tricky. But he did a kobold, and I really, really wanted to play it. But my friend who was a DM was like, we're only doing base races. And I'm like, come on. And it's because my other friend, if he didn't have that rule, then he would max out all the characters and they wouldn't be able to play the level. And I'm like, well, you could just up the level of all the enemies. So I'm so crying about that. So when you brought that in, I was really like, oh, look it. So I was really excited about that. And then towards the end, when you start getting, it starts getting more deeper and a darker place with the, you know, the revenge and going forth. I really, really love that. The dialogue was great. I always think that you do dialogue well, so I'm very happy about that aspect. You kind of just don't do just storytelling, but you actually bring in the different personality types through their words, and you're very consistent in that, and I like that. Like, you have specific ideas for characters in there. Character background, their personalities, and you stick with it, and you see it throughout all the series. I think this is so great. I'm so glad that you were able to call in live, and I kind of really want to see where this is going with the, you know, you and your husband murdered my son, and where this is going to lead and what the next interaction is going to be. So I'm super excited for that. To give you a little heads up, The next one is a monk class. There's three more in the classes that I have scheduled, and the monk is next. So, raconteur, what do you think?
That was great, Stephen. Sky mentioned, I would say, you know, it's in the form of screenwriting. You know, it's very easy to picture and very easy to translate it into something that would be on screen. You know, it's also great to be able to picture the raven the way you did the kobold. Was an interesting choice to add because, you know, of all the creatures, you know, they're around as I think NPCs. I don't know that's you can make a player character out of it, but I've never heard. My memories of them go back way to like version one before. I think it's like version five of D&D. So the characters probably changed a little bit, but whatever it is, you know, having one as like, you know, a helper, an assistant, however you want to put it, or a slave even. Because you never know with the Morlocks. They could be like, you know, I got a spell on you and you can't get away from me kind of thing. But you know, the idea of the revenge and the woman in shackles. There's a lot that you don't include, but is still evident and you know gives you room to flesh it out too. On top of that, and you know you hinted stuff, so you have an idea of the direction it's going, but you still leave yourself enough room that people can't be sure of, you know, which way the story's going. So, you know, you tell it in a great way. You know, the idea of a quote-unquote familiar and casting the spell on the raven and looking through the raven's eyes and doing that with the raven comes through, even though that's not what he did. It's a different spell that you know, he can use the raven to spy on someone. But, you know, again, that was great. So you've got the action of the party and the fight from the last chapter, but you still carry it over enough that it almost feels like you read that part too tonight because, you know, you're complimenting him on his fighting skills. So, you know, there's kind of flashbacks in your head of you know, well, that this guy must have did, you know, shown off or whatever and did a good job, you know, defending them when he killed the walker. And then, you know, the raven went back to report the news and picked up on the story from there. And then so now we're getting the story of I keep wanting to call him a wizard, because you know that was a different class. But you know the magician, the warlock, and you know what he's doing, and you know what his intentions are, and you know you know what to expect in some regards. So you still leave enough room for it to unfold, though. So you did a fantastic job telling the story. I could have just said that and been done, but I don't know.
Thank you. Yeah, I just figured I used kobolds in the first chapter. They're what took Argo's father and mother away. Of course, I like to say that Argo was named after the ship, the Argonaut, from Jason and the Argonauts. And in the legend of Jason and the Argonauts, Jason and the daughter of Aeetes, she falls in love with Jason and tries to leave with him with the Golden Fleece, and they kill her brother to escape. So that's the whole thing. Aeetes tracking them down to exact his revenge.
I love it. Absolutely love it. Well, if you ever play D&D again, you're going to really have a really, really fleshed out story with all these chapters.
True.
Awesome. Before you leave, Stephen, do you have anything you want to plug? You got some books, though? What do you just plug it all?
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, everybody knows about the Eerie series, right? The Eerie Depths, the Eerie Ocean, and the Eerie Islands. And I thought I was going to be done with the Eerie series with that, but I like the character so much that I wrote another one. And it's available now called the Eerie Chasm. And I'm actually currently writing the Eerie Freighter. And, of course, all available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and other venues, too. But I'm just not sure. There's so many now, I don't remember what they're called. I also have two books of short stories now available The first one was What Lurks Behind the Eyelids, and the second one is Behind the Closet Door, and the second one actually has a sequel to Garage Sale. If you liked the Garage Sale short story, there's a sequel called Bed and Breakfast. So, yeah, I like to ruin any vacation. So, yeah.
I remember the Garage Sale, and that was quite, that was a lot. That was scary. I just remember thinking, I don't have enough anxiety about going out in public. Now I got to be worried about garage sales being murdered. And what, well, I am already worried about that, but oh my gosh, it was good. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you.
Thank you. You guys have a good night.
All right.
I got to get off.
Good night, Stephen. Okay. Good to hear you.
Bye.
You too. Take it easy.
Thank you. Okay.
Eerie silence.
So we have another call. Eerie silence. So we have another person, but I'm just like I don't have. Oh, okay. Here we go. Let's do it. I just pressed it. I know you like Golden Boy. Like, you like him good, you like him good.
I do, because Superman's my favorite.
So, how are you doing, Pretty Bird?
I am doing awesome. What's funny is I argue with one or more of my sons on a regular basis about between Man of Steel, Superman, and Killing Zod, because no. I am all
oh,
good
that's
all
right.
The
you
time.
Got really mad. I remember this. I remember this conversation. You didn't like
yes.
how he killed him.
No.
Yeah.
I didn't
cried.
Like that he killed
I
him.
Cried.
I can care less how he killed him. But no.
Yeah.
We also
I didn't mean like how.
Today, me and my 18-year-old.
why didn't you get an argument? Wait, hold on. We're skipping. Hold on. Go back.
Well, I like my good good, and I like my bad bad. None of this wishy-washy, middle-of-the-road, humanized nonsense.
Mm.
I mean, you know, because everybody yeah. is on that sliding scale of goodness, depending on perception, situation, and everything else that life incurs. Superman is inherently good all the time. Superman does not kill people. Superman, I mean, I get for the greater good, but up until Man of Steel, outright like that. I don't care how tortured he's thinking was. It's fine.
He,
but then he's like,
his,
well, you know, Star State of pure evil. And I'm, what'd you say?
But that part makes me, like, tear up every time, no matter how many times I watch it.
Yeah, no, that part makes me hate Henry Cavill as Superman. I'm just saying.
Oh,
and
okay.
besides that and his freaking curls all over the damn place, the hell is that shit? It's fine. And, but yeah, so he's all Darth Vader is evil. I was like, Darth Vader is not evil. Darth Vader is bad. Darth Vader is unconscionable, but he is not evil. He started out good. He was gaslighted and manipulated by someone who was evil. He did what he did, all the bad things to save his family, and that didn't happen. Then he was just like, you know what? If I can't be happy, I can give a crap about anybody else. But at the end, he then returned back to his goodness, therefore not truly evil.
And
your son,
he's
like, no, because, you know, all of this stuff. And I'm like, no. I have yet to
I,
with
I, that's why he's just, I remember he's like, why do you love Darth Vader and Anakin Skywalker? I said, I don't know, I just love him. And she's like, tortured soul. I feel like he really was set up to fail. Every person from the beginning was like, "Oh no, you're gonna be downfall. We don't trust you. We don't trust you. We don't trust you." Like I just
self-fulfilling prophecy. Oh. But it's the Emperor. It's the Emperor's evilness with all the freaking gaslighting, with all the you must do all of these bad things to save your family or to become whatever. Yada yada. Blah 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 blah. And with all of his innocence. Even though he's doing bad things and knew that they were bad, he did it for the betterment of those that he loved without any even inclination that he was being led towards the evil that he didn't want to become. Like, that mm-hmm. was a side thing. Like, his family was inconsequential, that he was being led in the wrong direction. So I understand that. I mean, I don't forgive the bad things he's done. I mean, whatever. And he did try to kill Luke Skywalker after he knew that he was his son, and he chopped off his hand and left him to hang there to die, so there is that.
What about all the younglings? He killed all the younglings.
He killed all the younglings, but I was telling my argument to my 18-year-old was, if I had a newborn and I could not feed that newborn, and I go to the store and I steal formula to feed said newborn, it is a bad thing for a good reason, you know? And there's mm-hmm. a balance to those choices that that life forces you to make. He killed the younglings, which is horrid, okay, but he loves Padme so much.
I don't know.
I love the twins so much.
I put my foot down if I kill my children.
Well, that's because we have these morals. But if you've got your mentor, the person you look up to, looking at you going, you have to do this or they're going to die. You have to. They're going to die. And greatness is to follow, but they're going to die if this doesn't happen. Then you're pitting these little these children that you know, were basically kind of ripplers in their family to be who they're going to become, and the people that you love, the only people besides your mother that you have ever believed loved you. It is his everything. It's not your normal, well, this is bad, but it's a big deal. And while I don't like Vader, because I don't like wishy-washy villains, you know, I'm like, do it and be done with it. None of this, with the sadness and the crying for the killing of the children, and then his people died anyway, and then lo and behold, his gaslighter comes to take his lava-filled flesh and put him in a machine to live, and he's like, well, you know, then now he's in no shit, then F all y'all, because if it sucks to me, it's going to suck to be you. I'm just saying.
I have opinions. Yeah, this is like, I don't
know.
Hold on. Are you ready?
Uh-huh.
It's coming. It's like, oh, that's not it. Oh, I'm so
the four Peters.
All right, go ahead. And what's another thing?
I have to say that you're awesome. That the theme song for Darth Vader is the best thing to play in band, because it's all like tuba and baritone all the time. And there aren't very many theme songs that feature low brass, and that's just my thing. So I love the music. But yeah, back in the remakes, in the newer sessions of Darth Vader, the lightsaber is a warrior's weapon. It was meant to be held like Luke Skywalker and Obi-Wan in the original Darth Vader, with two hands, like the samurai sword. It is something that takes power to wield correctly. What is this gymnast, one-handed ninja sword having guy up in that other movie where he's slipping off the walls like it ain't no thing? What is that? It's like light as a feather, stiff as a board. No, this is not some weird lightsaber voodoo magic. It is a powerful weapon, and it very clearly is supposed to be held with two hands. So says, you know, the ancient lore, the canon from yesteryear before Disney got a hold of it. It's fine.
We were just talking about, because they had remade, we just did the last, my last core episode of the, I can speak, I swear, of the Star Wars series, and we were just talking about how they kind of went off the Legends canon. And they kind of just said the Legends canon didn't exist because Han Solo's children were completely different in the Legends canon.
I cannot get over the super twins don't exist. It's okay. I'm not over it. I will never be over it because I can't get over that the super twins don't exist, that they're twins, that they're supposed to have twins.
Yeah.
And now,
so,
yeah, like I was waiting for this, and then it's just...
Jason. Jason and Jay something. What was it, Jason? We were just talking about this.
It's horrible, isn't it? Couldn't they stick with, like, any of the freaking canon? Any of it at all? Anything that's been there for decades?
Yeah, so I don't know why.
That's not meant to be,
it.
You know, a reboot.
Yeah, I don't know why they did it. I don't
know why
they did
it. I feel some kind of way.
Yeah, and then they basically, and we went over this last time, there was a Ben Skywalker, which was Luke's son, and they kind of just took Luke's son and made it Han Solo's son. It didn't really make any sense.
Yeah, I am not thrilled at the mental mess that he was. Not good, not evil, completely psycho and traumatized as a child when, you know, because everybody's childhood is myopic. There's no children on the face of the planet are born to see the world as a whole. They see their existence and the world as it pertains to them. That's how, you know, they learn things. And so this is now he looks up to his father, or grandfather, and then he has to, when he killed his father, first of all, kudos to all of my nerdlet friends who did not a single one for months until I saw it, not on Facebook, not anywhere, did I get a hint of that coming. It was not okay. I ended up seeing that on my birthday. Not okay. I was just like, the hell is this nonsense? Not okay. But, I'm glad that they didn't ruin it for me because that would have sucked. But I was so looking forward to the Wonder Twins. I mean, I get that they're not the Wonder Twins, that the Wonder Twins are all just Justice League and superheroes and whatnot. But still,
yeah.
I'm old. It's fine. I'll get over it.
And like we were talking, how creepy it was. It was like Game of Thrones because technically it was Palpatine who took Anakin's DNA and merged it with the Dark Force to create what's her name? Rey. Like, she was a creation of that. So when she had a thing with Ben...
Yeah, I totally didn't get that.
It was kind of like incest, really. There's no other way to put it.
I mean, is there something that I'm missing? They didn't get together yet.
No, they kissed though. They had a romantic involvement and they kissed at the end.
Yeah, so
like they like
losing Leia.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Okay, there you go. Well, you know why that was.
But they weren't supposed to be brother and sister at the time of
doing.
That movie.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. That was just what I was going to say. George was at that point still debating if this is going to be like they're going to fight over her kind of her thing. Who's she going to choose? Oh, wait a minute. I'm going to make it after the movie's installments have already started. And I'm going to make it this, which didn't make much sense.
I like my reluctant heroes. I like my Han Solos in movies. I like the ones that aren't really bad. They just do what they got to do to get by, and then they reluctantly choose and make a choice that turns them into the person that maybe they could have been back in the day if they weren't so traumatized in childhood like they all are. Oh, isn't there a book you would know, Sky? I think I actually have it, but I don't know that I ever read it because there's so many tiny words. And I say this because my eyes are crap. About every hero or the there's only like three heroes or whatever. All, you know, the three faces of a hero. I don't remember what it is. I'll find it. But it's basically saying that, you know, you've got this type of hero, and this type of anti-hero or whatnot. And in every good versus evil, anything good versus bad from back in the day until the end of time, they're all basically fall into these categories. And it's a really interesting read, if I can remember what the heck the name of that book is.
Yeah, I always...
Well, from what I read,
like
I didn't finish the whole thing.
The, what do they call it, the anti-hero? hero, the one that are bad, and then they go good, and then they find redemption. They always have to die to reach redemption, right? Like, that's the only way to get redemption, is to sacrifice yourself at that point. We're going to do a poem, though. We're going to do a poem, because I usually don't have that many poems, but I have a couple more. So, and if we don't get through all the poems that were posted on the other topic board rack, I'll pull them over for tomorrow night. So I'm not worried about getting all the poems done. I'm not stressed about it. I do want to get a couple of them, but I can put them on tomorrow's show, whatever we don't do tonight. So I'm definitely not – I don't want to cut conversation too much, because the D&D shows really are – I don't bring any clips. They're mostly chat. So – oh my gosh! Like, I feel like we could talk about Star Wars. Huh?
Is that what we're doing? Are we chatting?
Yeah, you know. Well, you know what it is. Like, so I was at. I'm going off topic, but it'll be really quick. I was at work the other day, and we were like just sitting there because it was like they were all in. All the people were in bed, and it was in my second job, and I was just. We were talking about. Oh, I've had this new plant obsession, like. I go through these like these obsessions, and like I hyper focus. It's not really an obsession, but I get this idea in my head and I hyper focus, and then until I hyper focus on something else, it's like a really bad trait, because when I hyper focus, it's like all I can focus on. But I really want plants, and I've in my new apartment, the light is, I have light. I mean it's nice, you know, and. So I've had these three spider plants for 3 months since I moved in, and they haven't died, and they're like doing really good. So I promised myself if I didn't kill them, I could get more plants. So I was like Googling online, I'm doing all these things, and the person I was with, she does plant nurseries. So I'm like getting energized, and I'm like, and I was looking at this snake plant and this one, and I was thinking about getting English ivy and putting it over here. Like, I was just so excited. And then she went away to go do someone's meds for like 20 minutes, and then came back, and I was like completely like depleted of energy. And she's like, what happened? Yeah. I'm like, well, you left me alone, and I wasn't excited in conversation, so I went back to my natural state. just inside myself. So my point is, like, if you get me on a topic that I'm really passionate about, I tend to go off a little. That was the point. That was the point of that.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
AKA Star Wars. All right, so this is the first one I'm going to do is JCA, and I'm going to read, and it goes a little bit like this. More than words. Do heartbeats scrawl through fingertips? Geisha Fandango with persimmon lips, sentient words cast in the brain, planted in plots, suck in the twain. Lead me, lend me your hand, land in peach palms, more than words, greater than songs, hips of the samba wave in the breeze. Magnus then whispers, mirror the knees, silk beaded flowers, on worn olive skin, inhaling your touch, skull spinning like gin. Quiet the mouths with braille on fingers, waltz in my eyes as your body lingers. End poem. And of course, the prompt was more than words. And I love how, yes, this was a prompt, but he didn't like strip the original and kind of, I mean, he braided obviously the one line more than words, but he definitely made it his own. It was so very lyrical, which I also liked. And I loved how he brought in the samba wave, and he brought in different aspects of music and dance, and he kind of brought it through this beautiful, you know, sensual love and soulful piece about affection. So it was definitely done fabulously. And your topic was extreme, so that's what, so you got this poem fit. So Rack and Tora, what do you think?
I think he did a fantastic job, like you said, making those words his own. That's one of the things I like about, you know, titles and songs and whatnot. There's more than one way to look at almost anything, and to take something like that out of context, and it's fairly simple because it's an idea, you know, more than words. Can mean so much. There's some controversy about that song, about what it means. You know, some people say it's beautiful and romantic, and some people say it's selfish and you know, different. But you know, the way he wrote it, there's no doubt he was really talking about the idea of, you know, it's more than words when I look at you. It's my feelings and affections that I'm giving you, and you know that I'm reading from you. So he did a fantastic job of that, and I really appreciated him for that. You know, just a great JCA.
Excellent comment, and pretty good.
You know, I do love his sensual words. They're very quite beautiful. For me, it's from verse 2. I mean, there's only 3 verses, but they say so much. And when it goes to more than words, greater than psalms, that pulls me right into the biblical essence of love. And not necessarily outright sex, but when he starts talking about quiet the mouths with braille on the fingers. And here is the thing. When you are trailing a line with delicate fingertips, reading every goosebump, because they inevitably will happen, and every curve, every hair standing on end at the electricity in fingertips, it's very palpable with these few words. When you are in sync with somebody, whatever the moment is, whether you're actually dancing or you're, you know, doing other things, when you're in sync with somebody on more than just a physical level, it is very much a lyrical thing. It's a very beautiful movement that doesn't, like, it doesn't miss a beat. And so this was wonderfully metaphorical, but wonderfully poetic. And, you know, unfortunately not all poems are poetic, even though that kind of doesn't even make sense. But it really just is. There's a beauty in the written word that when you can suss out the nuances of a line with, you know, to anybody who reads it, where you don't have to guess what they meant, where you don't have to say anything outright, but it taps into a memory or a feeling or a thought, it's almost magical. And this kind of hits that spot for me. So it's quite beautiful.
Brilliant comment. Excellent, and thank you, Jay. And, yeah, pretty worth your comments. Glad I didn't have to follow that up. So here's the lineup. We're going to go Titus, then we're going to go Pretty Bird's first one, and then we're going to go Boot Ho. So that is the lineup so far. And Pretty Bird, I don't know how long you're here for, but before you go, let me know, because I want to show you something. And you may already know this, but I want to show you something before you go. I mean, you probably already
like
know.
I have patience to not be showing to me now.
No, you have patience. Okay, so I know too. She's like, what? You probably already know it, so it's okay, but maybe not. I didn't know it until a couple years ago, so it was pretty new information for me as well. Okay,
Pretty Bird has something that you might not know about John Williams.
Oh, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things I don't know. About what?
John Williams, apparently. Little nugget I learned the other day. What, an hour after the poem?
Yeah, let's go. I have patience, and I want to know. But I'm going to do Titus. I'm going to do Titus, and then we'll comment. Because my little info was about John Williams too, so kind of.
Oh, wow!
Well,
same thing.
Yeah.
That would be funny.
Yeah. I wonder if it's the same thing. Yeah. Okay. All right. So here's Titus. I'm gonna go ahead and press play.
Death be nothing more. Seen on the face of those each morn. Who countless times have always worn their saddest day. While no denying death it stalks, a gaze for which their long-lost walks give not one say. Such was the greeting which has led you on your way. Not much was said, but for the longest moment yet, the part you play, your mind is set to live through it. There's nothing you can do, I doubt, if it's worth giving life without, you must admit. Your death will be nothing more than time which stopped your life before.
That was done. Excellent. I don't know what that background thing was, but it was like kind of creepy. Kind of, I don't know, for a moment I thought it was a pacemaker. I'm not sure if that was like intentional
metronome
or what that was. Yeah, it was something. But it was cool. It was a cool background. And, I mean, the way that he wrote this was gorgeous. I like how he speaks of death and how he focuses on that one moment. And I guess you could also, for your topic, the extreme, you know,
yeah,
when people focus, you know, talking about hyper-focusing on something, right? A lot of people do contemplate their death and what will happen after. And I really enjoyed the closing lines with the death will be nothing more than the time which stopped your life before. I don't know, it's just very clever. And really, really enjoyed that. And I love the line structure. He always does the line structure so brilliantly, and I really appreciate his, you know, his more vintage style of writing. Really well done. Bracken Tour, what do you think?
Yeah, that was amazing, Titus. You know, you can't get much more extreme than, like, the beginning or the end. So you went right to the end, and you summed it up in a way that kind of opens things up or opens your mind up a little bit too, because you talk about nothing more than time stopping. What happens at that point, you know, I mean, for the body, it's one thing, but you know, you're kind of implying to me that there's more than that, you know, it's just one, you're passing from one existence to another, and you know, it's an extreme ending, it's an extreme, but not, you know, not necessarily the ending that you think it might be, so you still managed to twist that a little bit for me, and I love the way you write, and I love the way you presented it, and you know, the everything about it was just brilliant. I really enjoyed it, Titus. Thank you very much for taking the time and contributing that. I hope you're out there listening too. I know you do that once in a while.
Excellent comment. Thank you, Rex. And Pretty Bear?
You know, he could even make death sound romantic. I'm just saying. And I love the rhyme and flow, There's something just beautiful, maybe a little Poe-esque about the way this is written. And maybe it's just the kind of shadowy vibe of the piece, or maybe it is in the rhyme scheme itself, but it gives, and I love me some Poe, so it's not a bad thing. I'm just saying. And my mama raised me on stormy days when the afternoon sky goes black to read us all the creepy poems and then explain to us exactly what they meant so we didn't miss a beat. She wasn't twisted, it's fine. But I love this. This is everyday, this is everyday loneliness to me. This is every stranger you would ever meet, because not everybody walks around by themselves through a park, seeing other people, friends, not friends, and they smile, or they, it's like not in any real kind of way, maybe in a little, you know, slightly upturned lip and a nod for a good day, because that's what polite society does, but not in any real kind of connection. And when somebody asks you how you are, you say, yeah, that's fine, but all the while, you're contemplating maybe your own self-worth, maybe your place in the world, maybe all of these things that just compound that feeling of inconsequentiality. Ooh, look at me with the big words. And that can really weigh you down, especially if you are not if you're self-isolating, which is, you know, apparently my jam, where you don't want to burden other people with your nonsense because you don't want to be that person. So you kind of suck it up and you're in there. And so you don't reach out and you don't get help. And so basically you're taking your next breath just till you get to your last one, you know. And the way I read this, there's nothing but for the longest moment yet, the part you play, your mind is set to live through it. There's nothing you can do. I doubt if it's worth giving life without. And life without, to me, isn't so much life without love, life without whatever. It is life, like, you know, when you contemplate things within, you show things without. So it is what you are giving. It is, to me, which of course, you know, I'm probably wrong. I usually am. It's fine. But to me, it is very much, if you are not participating in your own existence outwardly, if you do not release any of that through what you do or trying to help others or in whatever way you see fit to crawl out of the annals of your own mind, I mean, if you're not doing anything, you're basically living to die. And that is a horribly emotional, deep, dark thought, probably because it's sadly very true, at least in part, for most of us at one time or another. So yeah. This is beautiful, and I love, 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 Titus, the way you read and the way you write, obviously. But it is very, very heavy and very, very stark and very, very emotional, because apparently I don't know any more adjectives tonight than very, very, so apparently I'm in sixth grade.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's just, it's really amazing the kind of starkness of being locked in your own emotion, not willing or not able or not confident enough or not feeling worthy enough to even share. And that is a powerful thing to me. So, fabulous.
Awesome comment. Sometimes I get stuck on a word and I'm just like, that's my favorite word. I think I said when I was excited about a show on it, and then I was like, so excited. And then Stephen thought he was funny, so he put a link on the board of adjectives for excited. Not adjectives, synonyms. So, oh my goodness. Absolutely brilliant comment. Oh, look at this. You were. Okay, so thank you.
Titus.
Yes, yes. Oh, someone's going to have to. I'm not writing these down, so these thank yous are going to be. Oh, I could just look on the links. All right. Pretty Bird, I'm so excited.
Yes.
I'm not going to lie. This poem makes me a little. I mean, it hurts my heart. But, you know, you went with it. You just do you. It's up there. Max might have to make the first comment.
Oh, this one. Okay. Because I didn't refresh my page, and I'm looking at something that had nothing to do with me, but okay, here we go.
That's the one you wanted, right?
This is the one. It does the F-bomb in it, and okay. I will probably say it because PG-13 allows one per night, so I'm claiming it for my own. Okay.
Okay, all right.
I could tell you, but it's not like you'd ever ask me. It goes like this. I want it not to hurt. I want clean slates and do-overs, whipped cream complete with cherries, and for sugar to be a health food. I'd settle for feeling important on occasion, or to matter enough to myself to stop giving the best parts of me away. My honesty is unappreciated for the beauty, dedication, and honor it takes to be so black and white, right and wrong, in a sliding scale world of corrupt ideals, where ethics only exist for convenience. People steal words from text, woo lovers, and they aren't mine. The lovers, that is. The words break spirits into particles that glitter in the sun just before they disappear. But I trust anyway, implausible deniability of unveiled falsehoods. Forgiveness is the only virtue I have to my own detriment, but I do love, and love hard enough to bleed on that bed of sharp tongues with thin skin that has nothing to do with forgiveness. I never learned how to mend fences or unburn bridges. I can't unfuck a relationship or downgrade a vision of truth that was the happiest I've ever been as an adult.
but I want it not to hurt. I want clean slates and do-overs, whipped cream complete with cherries, and for sugar, to be a health food. And palm.
Oh, God.
Oh, I didn't really mean it. I was only kidding. Sorry. You should make the first comment, Rack, because I might go on and on. So you go first.
Oh, I mean, it's kind of easy to go on and on when you love somebody's perspective on things. And, you know, especially when you can relate to the topic. I tell you, but it's not like you'd ever ask. It's just one of those things. For me, there's times when I don't want to influence someone. So I don't want to ask, or I don't want to say, you know, what I'm thinking, regardless of if they ask or how they ask sometimes. So it's a really emotional point of view to take, your relationship with the truth also factors into things when you read things like this for me as well, because, you know, it's not like you would lie. So, you know, it's like you have to warn people before they ask you how you feel. Did you really want to know? Because I'll tell you. And
that is my response.
Yeah, I you know what? As for me personally, I appreciate that kind of response, because, you know, the in the back of my head, it's like, well, I wouldn't be asking if I really didn't want to know, you know, and there's no point in asking if you know the person's going to lie to you either. So, but it comes from a very emotional place, depending on the topic that you're talking about. So yeah, relationships can be tough like that, and. You know, even just a simple question comes to mind when you walk when you face someone in the street and you say, "How you doing?" You know, that turns into that whole, do you really want to know thing. This is so multi-layered and deep, and it has personal notes in it without being personal, you know, because it's outwardly relatable in a unique way. So. Nobody can kind of pin you down on it, and on the one hand, but, you know, the person that you were thinking of when you wrote it would read it and go, oh, she's talking about me. So I love that you can do that in such a heartfelt way. Brilliant piece. Brilliant piece.
Thank you.
Excellent comment, Rackin. You know, I love this one. It's on my recommended listen AP, and as you just found out, I do have a folder on iCloud that is dedicated to you. I have a few. I do stock Pretty Bird on SoundCloud, but I not only do have a couple of people that have their folder on SoundCloud, and you are definitely one of them. And this is in it, because I really, really love it. And I send people to your SoundCloud. I'm just like, here, you need to listen to this. And, you know, it's kind of funny you said, do you really want to know? I think it's just such, I understand your personality when it comes to that aspect. And I say this often, I don't think you're the same person. You guys are very different people. But there are a lot of things that in your personality, that are a lot like my best friend's personality that I've been friends with her for inseparable for like 24 years. And one of the things is that if you ask her a question, you better be ready. And she'll even say, are you sure? And that's her response. She legit says, are you sure you want to know? Because she does not lie. She just won't lie. And she's like, honest is all. And she doesn't compromise those values for any reason. Like, it's just, she is so unfaltering in that. So I really get that kind of personality, because I have someone I've had and have still for more than half my life now, and I've known her more than, you know, we've been friends more than not in my life. So I understand that there are people that exist like that. I don't think I would have believed it if it wasn't for her, but I definitely get it. And I get you're definitely, I understand that kind. So when you say that, I get it. And it's just, and I get how it is often underappreciated and often seen as something different. And a lot of people with that type of non-compromising though this is, it's hard for them. Like, I see that struggle because it's like you, it's like you're not even, you're, it's like my expectations aren't high. This is just where they should be. And it seems like people are just, you know, they, like, it's not hard. Just don't do this. Like, you know what I mean? And it's always, I don't know. I just feel like it's always a struggle. And it's just, it's often unfair because people just are, they don't take it and they don't take that honesty well because nobody likes to see them. I appreciate it. Even if it's hard for me to hear and I may be like a little grumpy, I always appreciate honesty because it often follows. What often follows it is growth. You could either take that honesty and spit it back in someone's face, or you can say, why does this person think this? Let me take a look at myself. And that is not easy for people to do. I appreciate that because I like to grow, and I'm not perfect, and I like to say, okay, well, why does this person think this, or why do they say this? Of course, I have to have respect for that person and trust that that person is, you know, saying it for the reasons that they should. But luckily, I think I only have that herd that's that honest all the time. But again, so the same thing in that stanza with the sliding scale, you know, well, what is okay? And when you do a little white lie, when does it turn into, you know, when does it turn into more? So are white lies okay? No, they're not. But people do that sliding scale, and it's a slippery slope. So I really love that. And then, of course, when you get down to, where was it? The forgiveness is the only virtue I have to my own detriment, you know, that idea. Okay, well, I love you, and I'm going to forgive you. And sometimes, you know, you may not forget what people do, and sometimes you forgive them. There's that whole thing, forgive and forget. But sometimes when you forgive.
I said they are not mutually exclusive.
Yeah. Sometimes you're just, I mean, it's, yeah.
I forget nothing. I won't hold it against you, but I forget nothing.
Yeah. Store it.
You
store
can't walk
it,
back
well,
that
that's
kind
what
of pain.
That's what I meant. Like, just because you forgive does not mean you forget those transgressions. And unfortunate, right? People are people of habit, and it's yeah. So I love that, and I love the emotion. I mean, the emotion in the whole piece is wonderful, especially when you get down to the, but I do love. And I don't know why, it's just four simple words, but for some reason, when you read this, that always hits me pretty hard. I just because it's like I have all this inside me that I give to the world, I give to somebody, I give to something, and because of that, I'm feeling all of this pain. And I think that's why those four words kind of get me. And that penultimate stanza is definitely the mending fences and the unburned bridges and the relationship because, yeah, and sometimes we get into these cycles where we want to fix it. At least I know I do sometimes. I'm like a fixer. I'm like a horrible fixer. I want to fix things that are even my fault. It's like I sometimes have to say, I can't fix that. I need to walk away. But I am such a, I want to fix it for somebody. I want to make things better. I'm such that kind of person that sometimes I'm just like, I've had to learn to say, that isn't my mess. I can't fix it. And that person has to do it for themselves. Or this isn't working, and I have to think of my own health and walk away. And that's really hard a lot of the time. But I feel like I've gotten better at it. But I love it. And I love how you go for, you know, sugar to be a health food. Like, because it's so off from, like, what the topic is. And but it's metaphor, and I love that about it. I love when people can just take things and just throw them out there, and I think it's a really great line. I told you you should comment because you wouldn't get a word out of
mine. Well, you know, yeah, it's a lot better than saying it ain't ever going to happen. I have some Instagram psychology for you that
you just made me think of in your last little bit of your fabulous comment, if you would indulge me for a slight moment.
Go for it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes?
The wheels are off now. We've gotten a couple down, so I'm not like, get to the poems.
So apparently, when we are hurt or people end up not being who we thought they were, yada, 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 blah, 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 things end separate ways. Okay. The reason why we linger or we still love and we miss the people that hurt us so badly has nothing to do with, or not a great deal to do with, what we actually felt for them. Every time we were hurt, every time we were afraid, every time we were gaslighted, every time we knew it wasn't our fault and we made the excuses, you know, he's having a bad day on their good days, you know, they could be who they are on their good days all the time, and you fall in love and you say to yourself over and over and over and over, he's a good person, she's a good person, you know, this isn't like them, over and over and over for months or years. And that mantra every day is what your brain believes, because that's what you told it to believe repeatedly. So you don't miss them because you love them outright. You miss them because you love who you wanted them to be. And that's a very hard thing to get over. And apparently it's also why positive self-affirmations, if done consistently and, you know, every day over time, actually work, because you train your brain to believe what you tell it on a regular basis. So all of that negative self-talk that apparently I stew in is not doing me any favors. But I thought that that was an interesting take on things by some psychiatrist that has a freaking Instagram page that popped up my nonsense. I'm like, apparently I needed to ruminate on that perspective, so I thought I'd share. Oh, also, Rack, when you're like the person who I wrote it about, will know it's about them, I've had a contest. I've had a plethora of people that I barely even know will read a poem and be like, well, you know, you could have just told me, or, you know, you don't have to put stuff about me out there. I'm like, I don't know who you are. You don't even know my name. This isn't the thing. So much so that I've had contests, and I periodically post a quote from that is ascribed to Morgan Freeman, and he's sitting there with a cigar and black and white picture with a fedora, and he says, no, the post wasn't about you. Yeah, but feel free to lace that bitch up and wear it, because there you go, and that is just where I live. Can we do our trivia now? Because I have no more patience.
So I have to ask you just to have a little bit more patience, just because usually AP is a read and run. So I promise you.
Oh, is he on?
I promise you. Yes, he just got. Yeah, he's waiting. I'm waiting to put him on.
Oh,
so
well, then,
as soon as he reads, then your patience can be over. Thank you, AP.
Hi, Sky.
Hello.
Hi,
how are you?
Good to hear you. I'm struggling in front of the air conditioner here. It's 96.
Oh my god!
Quite warmish, actually.
It was super warm here today. It was 57. It was like summer.
Oh wow!
Everybody was at the park. Everybody was at the park. Everybody. It was so amazing.
You got where I am. You know. Slightly warm. I cast my mind back. I cast my mind back because when I did D&D, I was either Dungeon Master or I used to be clerics. I didn't used to do warlocks so much, interestingly, because, you know, clerics were slightly sort of the people who sort of looked after people and cured light wounds and all that sort of stuff, and they could sort of wield stuff as long as it was stuff that bashed people, not with a blade. But but warlocks, I never really sort of got into as much. I have to be honest.
Clerics had better armor.
I was always the healer class. I don't know why I always drew the short card. Like, and I like it, but it's just I was always the healer. And I'm like, listen, I want to do something cool.
I don't want to just run around keeping on healing people. Like, I know that that is cool, but after you do it for a while, I'm like, listen, somebody else needs to do this because I don't want to do it anymore. I'm like, why can't I be the tank? And then they look at me and they're like, because you're 5'2 and you're too cute, get out of here.
The sort of guys who did the fighters and the, all that sort of stuff, that was funky until you got to later rounds when all the spellcaster stuff became a lot more fun. You just had to live long enough to be able to do them.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I love your D&D talk.
I've got a poem. I put it on the board, Skye. This is a brevity, but it goes to what we've been talking about. This is Master Caster. And it goes a little bit like this. A warlock was a mixed fighter, not a paladin, cleric, or mystic. It had deficiencies in its mitre, in armour, and striking holistic. Yet, within a big party of players, where there were other casters, often turned out to be the stayers, as were so many things to master. And often, when chosen from pack, was a tendency to go multi-class. Pairing with a paladin for attacks made it so much harder to pass. End poem.
Yeah, excellent. I love, and you know, I was just talking about multi-classing because there's this guy that I follow on YouTube and he's just so great at multitasking. I mean, multi-classing. And if done well, it's absolutely amazing. And I can totally see a cleric and a paladin. I mean, they're alone that those same devout path of, so I would imagine that they would pair together quite well. I've never quite been interested in being a paladin. But I have a friend who's just, he's all about his paladin. I thought this was really cool. I love how you brought it in. And, you know, and I don't know if this is where you were going in the middle stanza, but I feel like, and Rack has done it, and I actually did it too. Every time we go warlock, we want to say wizard. And even to the point where I thought I was doing a wizard show the other day, and I started putting in wizard songs. And then I'm like, oh, no, wait, you're not doing the wizard, you're doing the warlock. And then Rack did it today. He's like, I don't know why, I just want to say wizard. So it's like the warlock, you know, it's kind of like the class that gets forgotten, I think. And when you talk about being in the big pack, you know, I don't know, it just reminded me of that. So I love that you put that in. And then, of course, I mean, you want to be more powerful, and you need to have that, those, you know, hand-to-hand combat, you're going to have the paladin, right? Otherwise, he would just have to, if you don't have those melee defenses, he's just going to have to keep staying away. And that's the great thing about multiclassing with a melee character, or class rather, because you can be diverse in that. And a lot of, when you do spell casting, you can't even like hold a weapon So it's like if you get in any close range fight, you're pretty much useless. If you run out of spells for the day, well, not if you don't have melee. And a lot of, you know, when they say, oh, what's that? And you're rolling, you know, you want another weapon. You want something besides your magic just in case you're depleted. You know, so I'm a fan of multiclassing. So. Yeah, excellent piece, and I love that you brought in the D&D. Fracentor, you can disagree with me now, and comment on the poem.
I mean, that goes into gameplay, and I'd rather talk about his poem. But you know, if you want to argue about gameplay, you know, if you're a wizard, if you're a warlock, right, you wouldn't necessarily wait for casting time. You imbue the power into different items, and then that way you could just cast it instantaneously by using the item, as opposed to trying to sit there and go through the whole rigmarole of, well, this takes four turns. Well, no, it doesn't, because it's in the staff. So if I smack you with the staff, the spell goes off. So, you know, but anyways, the idea of the poem He's got the heart of the character in it, and he was focusing on that, not so much on the gameplay of it. And really, when you choose a character, I part of that has to do with the gameplay. But you know, it's also you imbue your own personality into the character too. You know, like you're saying, if you're into the up close and personal melee fighting, you're not going to want to be a wizard or a warlock, because now you had to say wizard out loud, damn you. Anyway, you don't want to be a character that has to take time to fight from a distance. That's more like a sniper that wants to stay hidden and can't get involved and can't wear armor and like he can wield a dagger. Oh boy, you know. But the other thing, he's got spells like magic missile and things like that that do a lot of damage across a large area too. So he's not so ineffective. He just has to play differently. Like he mentioned too, you know, a cleric is a different class of character, so he's going to play differently too. But you put that in the piece brilliantly. You know, even for a brevity, it's like if someone was wondering about the character, all they have to do is hear that, and they've got a good idea already of, oh, this is what he's talking about. So, you know, you did an excellent job of conveying the characters and the feel of it.
Thanks, Rick.
Excellent comment. And Prebird?
It is my turn. What's funny is my youngest son is turning into a D&D nerd, and we're working on a backstory that I'm hoping he wants to actually write a book, because he's got ideas of where he came from. He's a fairy cleric, and he's tiny. Don't ask me. He makes weird choices. Anyway, I love this poem. This reminds me of, like, if you've never heard of anything D&D, this is very bard-esque to me. Like you need like a mandolin, and you need to go around singing this as a little song to tell people what the heck you're in for and how things work. And I absolutely love that, because it's just fabulous. You have all these little bits of things that you need actual knowledge to put in here so concisely, and I think that's fabulous. And I'm going to go ahead and make you all cringe. I know Merlin is a wizard. However, if any of you have seen The Kid Who Would Be King, the way they do their spells, the two-handed, all the stuff that looks like some kind of funky sign language, is just brilliant to me, because that's what it has always kind of been in my head when I think of D&D spells. I'm just saying.
Yes. The descriptions of the casting of the spells fall under that, Pretty Bird. That's why, you know, you have to do it takes rounds rather than just an immediate thing. You have to go through the signs and sometimes, you know, with the feather and the incense and the whole nine yards. That's in the descriptions for the dungeon masters to take into account. It's like, well, you can't cast that spell because you don't have that component that you need to cast that spell. You know, someone's vision of it, they probably actually have some experience playing the game.
Oh, my God.
Awesome,
I love all my nerdy friends. It's like I have to, like, research.
I had to find the
right combination.
I had a cringe the other day, Sky. I don't remember whose show I was on, but they called D&D a card game, and I wanted to say, no, it's a MMORPG.
Right.
Oh, okay. Every time my goddaughter, she's gonna be 9 soon. Every time she goes, this is D&D. This is the parody. This is D&D. Epic RP. Oh my gosh, I can't even see. Epic. Art. Oh, okay, I can't do it right now. She could do it better than me. Tabletop role playing. Epic TTRPG. And she sings it without missing a beat. And I'm just like. I think it's the cutest thing, because Jacob Olin does this parody of This Is Halloween, but This Is D&D, and she nails it every time, and it's just so cute. And I'm like, yes, little geek minions. Just love it. AP, thank you so much for your poem. Absolutely brilliant. Do you want to plug your show before you go?
I guess I should. Yeah, so we've got an hour-ish type length show on Saturday night, and it's open poetry, and put your poem in, and if you've got a SoundCloud, great, and if you haven't, I'll read it. It's as simple as that. So it's good fun. And
it's not magic.
Yeah, no, we get through quite a bit. So, no, it's fun. So I hope to see you there, and onwards we go.
Awesome. Well, thank you, AP, for calling in and sharing with us.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Clara.
And we'll talk soon. Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye. Have a wonderful day. All right, Hatter, Hatter, Hatter. How are you, Hatter? Hatter?
I'm muted. I'm okay.
How are you doing? I see you try to skip the line by putting your poem on the board, but it's not your turn next, Hatter.
I have to put it in the group.
How are you doing?
Oh, my phone is just screwing up. I can't follow.
Okay. Well, I'm going to let you get that together because Pretty Bird has been waiting so patiently. Okay. I'm gonna put you on mute so you get that situated, okay, Hatter? Is that okay? And then just take yourself off mute when you have it situated because it's all I can hear. All right. I love you, Hatter. I'm so glad you came, but just figure out your phone. all right. Go ahead. You can tell me your trivia.
Ooh, okay. So the lead singer of Toto, Joseph Williams, who also plays adult Simba singing Hakuna Matata and does the theme song for some Care Bears nonsense, is the son of John Williams.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, so he does the adult Hakuna Matata, and he does what else?
Mm-hmm, he does. He's the adult Simba. And he's does one of the Care Bears movies. Some, I'm not a Care Bears fan, but he does the theme song. He's the lead singer of Toto, so, you know, Africa and whatnot. And he happens to be the son of John Williams. So, first of all, now that I know that adult Simba is the lead singer of Toto, I can't unhear it.
Okay. I love Care Bears, but I can't remember the songs. Actually, I almost just watched Care Bears the other day. I wish I did now that I can relate it. Are we talking like 80s Care Bears?
Not a big Care Bear fan, but I will find out for you right now.
Listen, that was my jam. I loved the Care Bears when I was little. I just love those movies. All right, let's see if Hatter's kept this situated. Hatter, do you have yourself situated?
You had your trivia.
Oh, I am. Don't worry. I have it. I have it locked and loaded, ready to play. But I just want to see if Hatter, you got yourself together?
Oh, my bad. It's not the Care Bears. It's the Adventure of the Gummy Bears theme song.
Gummy Bears.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know.
The only Gummy Bears as I know is that my godchildren have tortured me with this, oh, I'm a gummy bear, I'm a gummy bear, I'm a yummy, yummy, yummy gummy bear.
That's the whole song.
Over and over again.
It's
traumatizing.
Oh, man.
And then this is gummy bear hopping across the screen.
Oh, how to drop.
And I'm like, why are you torturing me right now? And they think it's the funniest thing. Oh, it's not okay. Hatter, I see you got yourself situated. Hi, Hatter.
Do you remember the battle between the wizard and the witch and the sword and the stone?
Oh, yeah. Her name is Madame.
I didn't say anything.
Morgana?
Oh, okay. You meant the cartoon, right? Sword and the Stone?
Yeah. Merlin. It was Merlin and that witch. Yeah,
it was Madame...
It wasn't Morgana. I mean, I know that that's...
Okay. I can't think.
Madam... Oh, I can't
Maeve?
Remember.
Matilda. Matilda.
Yes, Maeve. Maeve. It was Maeve. It was Madam Maeve. Good. Rack, good job. I'm like, what is that? That she was Mad Madam Maeve, right? That's what it was? Mad Madam Maeve.
I don't know.
It was epic.
It was,
so yes,
was
I do.
It was Merlin.
She turned into a dragon. She turned into a pink and purple dragon, I think, right? It was definitely pink.
Yeah. And that was out of bounds. That was against the rules they laid down. So he turned into a microbe.
And in fact,
yes, I remember that. I just love you.
A germ, yeah.
He's going wizard too, right? It's not the wizard, it's the warlock.
See, that's part of the evolution of the game, because back in the beginning, before version whatever you're on of Dungeons and Dragons, those were just when you leveled up. You went from mage to wizard to warlock. That was one of the levels. So you didn't have to say he was a level 19 or whatever. You said he was a mage, and you knew how experienced the person was. So, you know, to call it a class in itself, it was the magician class. And you know, depending on what kind of magician you were, told how long you were, how experienced you were.
He's going really old school. I don't think I was there for those
Madam
days.
Mim.
Madam Mim. Yes. I'm like, I knew it started with an M.
It started
with an M.
I'm so
made, sorry. Like, yeah, maybe that was it. No, that's it.
She
that's
was also the scullery maid.
So she turned into a big purple and pink dragon, right? Like, she transformed into one.
Yes.
And she had all funny hair. Yeah. I haven't seen that movie in
so
long.
Yeah, the rule was no mythical beasts. One of the rules was no mythical beasts. If I remember right. She was losing it, so she came into the dragon.
Pretty Bird has been so patient. So Pretty Bird... You said you loved the Imperial March because the band loved how it played, right? I'm not musically inclined, so can you help me? I mean, I love music, but I don't know the technical terms. What did you say?
Yeah.
Because it had what?
Well, a lot of the symphonies and orchestral scores from the movies are very much mid-range to high-range instruments with, you know, the tubas and the baritones doing, you know, auxiliary parts, but... When it comes to the Imperial March, it's very much, it starts off with the whole, you know, kind of staccato cadence and then goes into the main theme, and it's very much tubas and baritones and fabulousness.
Okay, so I'm going to play something. It's off of what I was planning to do tonight. I'm not going to play the whole thing, so I am going to cut it off because it is very long. I don't know if you know this, but I want you to listen. And this is not to the Imperial March, but I want you to listen. And listen very closely to this song. And then afterwards we'll talk about it already. I know. You already know Rex because you listen to me all the time, which I appreciate you. I've probably said that like 500 times. All right, here we go. It's playing. It might just take a minute to get into it.
There's no line. I hear it in the background. It's now up.
It's because it starts low.
Okay.
it goes back down. So did you think it sounded similar?
The whole under part did. It did also kind of reminded me of the background in Superman, I'm just saying. But yes.
What did it remind you of?
So Superman, which is John Williams as well. So the same thing that goes, the one that goes, that thing, the cliff, I don't know what it's called, because I'm not musically inclined, but so a lot of people think that the Imperial March and Luke and Leia's theme was Juniper. So there was a composer called Gustav Holst, and he did this whole suite called The Planets. And
yes, I love freaking Jupiter.
Oh, okay. That's the one, Jupiter. Jupiter is the one, I think. So you do know Gustav Holst. So everybody's like up in arms, and it's like that Star Wars was written really in 1914, 1917. But it was actually George Lucas that said to John Williams, I would like something similar sounding to this. And George Lucas gave him The Planets and said, this is what I want it to sound like, but different. So some people say, oh, well, he ripped it off. And then some people say, well, no, because he didn't even change some of the instruments. And he kept that same exact thing as a homage to that, and he just used it as inspiration. So there's a debate. You can debate on what side you're on.
Haters gonna hate.
So obviously you do know Gustav Holst.
I do. I've played a lot of that music. I'm a multifaceted nerd. I am going to give you an analogy of my own as to how I feel about that. Are you ready? Okay.
Yeah.
Giant Radiohead fan. Creep is creep. They openly admit, and once you hear it, you can't unhear it, that their key changers, they're very distinct. Whatever it is on the air that I breathe. And so once you listen to, you know, sometimes all I need is the air that I breathe and to love you, if you listen to the key changes in that, that is the underlying thing of Creep. And I'm okay with that because the overlaying parts are just similar enough that you're not going to lean this way or that way, even if there's a hint. However, where it starts to bother me is Olivia Rodrigo's vampire that wants to pretend that it's kind of Creep but swears that it didn't take anything from Creep, and I can't listen to it. I want to punch her in the face.
I don't know what you're talking
so
about.
There's a massive difference.
It's the vampire part. Yeah.
There's a massive difference between taking inspiration from and downright trying to pretend that you did it yourself. I mean, oh, Rash, that's funny because we had like a two-hour discussion on nonsense on design factors. But, yeah, it's one thing to glean inspiration. I mean, half of what we write, we get inspiration from a word we hear someone say, from a line that makes us feel something, so then we write about what that feeling is. And even if you pull from this and the other thing, it's not that big a deal. But if I put song lyrics in my poem and I don't put that those are song lyrics from somebody, that is not okay. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I love John Williams. And if there is, I mean, the statute of limitations for copyright, I'm sure, is done a million eons ago. So he's safe. He's good.
No, I agree with you. I don't hate, like Rack can tell you, I'm a huge John Williams fan, but I just discovered The Planets a couple of years ago, and I love that entire suite. It's kind of fun to be like, oh, well, you know, and to see where people get their inspiration from, and yeah, I don't hate on it. But I didn't know if you knew that, but I should have known because you're a musician, so that, I should have thought of that, but I said you probably know anyway. But that was was it worth the wait? Just to hear it,
I love. See, because I think it's funny because I actually did not even go to, and I was looking for
it reminded me a little bit more of the Goonies, if you ask me, like the score part of the Goonies, not the soundtrack part of the Goonies, which he did not do. That was David something with a G that I can't remember. And, but it's the underlying things, because in Superman, it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-
course, you've got a background that's got a similar staccato cadence, and that is what I heard, ish, similar in that. That's what stood out for me as far as that goes. So it wasn't even any of the main themes of the song. So I'm all kinds of nerds, so sorry.
No, I love it. I love it. You can bring all that nerd right in here. This is the perfect place for it.
Well, what is it called? Pretty Bird, there are a certain sequence of notes that they play that will bring up sadness or victory
or
different emotions. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. And I think they use that a lot. I mean,
they do. There is a science to it. There is actual mathematical, musical mathematical equations that you follow for emotion. Yeah. For anger, for joy, for elation.
Yeah. People that don't know music that as well as you, it sounds a lot similar to where a musician would be picking up the little nuances between differences, because it sounds a lot similar.
They did that a lot
with
the classical music and the things that evoke the emotions that you're talking about. They did that in cartoons all the time.
Sure, it's like the spook house, the haunted house, the organ, that sequence or that
the bones with the skeleton. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just it evokes a emotion from hearing it, and power. Yeah, that symphonic power, the Star Wars type, George Lucas, very similar to a lot of the other ones.
I like when people do popular songs in a minor key. I once heard someone on YouTube do SpongeBob SquarePants in a minor key, and it was miserable.
There's a guy that does all of it in minor keys. He's awesome.
Is it the
Who?
Beautiful
he
black keys?
Any song?
A piano.
Who? I'm sorry. Who?
I can't remember.
An
he's a little
right
short
now.
Blonde guy. That he, I can't remember his name, I'm looking him up right now, that he will take any modern song, any song, and skew it minor, and all of a sudden it breaks your heart, or it sounds really creepy.
Yeah. All right, so listen, I don't know how it happened, but I have 14 minutes left, so I am going to take 4 poems, and I'm going to put them on tomorrow, which is fine, because if nobody wrote to the Sound of Music. By the way, guys, Musical March is starting early. I am doing a Musical March, if you don't know. So we are slated to kick it off with the Sound of Music tomorrow, even though I just pushed it up. It was supposed to be next month, but I pushed it up. So tomorrow's the Sound of Music. And then next month, stay tuned, because we are doing, what are we doing? We're doing Crybaby. We're doing
Crybaby in a movie?
Yeah. I'm bringing all the music.
Oh, no.
Bringing all, I'm playing. No, you don't like it? Do you not like it?
That is the only movie I ever walked out of in my entire life.
Okay, well, you don't have to show up for that one. Maybe Sweeney Todd is more your liking.
Are we having a Johnny Depp theme? Because I've got stories.
Okay, you bring the Johnny Depp theme. But I'm warning you, if you don't like the Crybaby, I am playing all the music for these shows. So it's going to be a lot of listening.
Music. I love soundtracks. I don't mind music. But that movie was crap. I'm just saying. And I love myself some crappy B movies.
I don't know. I liked it. But I am playing all the music, so be prepared that there's going to be song. It's going to be mostly music. The show is going to be mostly just hanging out with music. But I'm going to put those 4 on tomorrow, and
So we are doing that. But maybe if Sweeney Todd is more your style, so we are doing a Sweeney Todd, and I'm doing a Les Miserables. And then once those are done, I'm starting my Silmarillion venture, which from one book, there's a lot of episodes. It's my new series, and I have a problem. I have a problem with doing things in their, completed, I don't know. Rex, like, how many volumes did you get out of this book? And I'm like, 45? 47?
It's not a problem. It's a token problem.
Yeah, it is a token. Oh, my gosh. I'm still recovering here. It's a token problem. It's not my fault he goes so in-depth with all his characters. I can't help it. Anyway, so stay tuned for that. All right. That's the only plugging I'm going to do at this moment because I got to have Hatter read his poem, and then we'll go from there. So, Hatter, you have the floor.
Okay. Let me run back. I forgot about that. Okay.
You forgot about
Warlock. Okay. Yeah, it's a warlock, right? The warlock.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, it goes like this. The wars and the early occupation prior to the year of the storms, a pact was made between the fringes and the days when warlocks were born, conjured up by cauldron spells, the covens rose, the evil tales. By season's end, they knew too well that warlocks were here to prey. Beware the meekest of the land, for there they hide in troubled lands, and it's here is where it all began. So listen to what I'm here to say. The dreams of ponds that once were gone have returned to live another day. Spells of those so reposed the sky. Oh, I'm sorry. The spells of those so reposed, the sky turned back, and here they stay. The rain is less, the warlock's nest. What comes in the devil's curse remain in crowds, the rain from clouds that quench the wizard's thirst. Heed this warning I leave with you, for life be taken when the tax is due. The warlock's skies will bleed your eyes, and nothing will ever again come true.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Exactly. I love how you're like, beware the meekest of the lambs. And not just like the lambs, but like the meekest of the lambs, where they hide in troubled lands. It's very, very foreboding, and I really enjoyed that. I love the darkness that you kind of went through, and how you go that warlocks are here to prey on those little meek lambs. And I just thought that you just brought a wonderful darkness to it. I love how you've gotten conjured up by cauldron. By the way, The Black Cauldron, a great book. It's actually book two that they made into the movie. They totally skipped one, but it's okay. So I don't know why, but it's probably because your picture. Even though there's no cauldron in that picture, and it might have been because I looked at the picture right before you started reading, I just pictured the green mist coming out of the cauldron that you were speaking of. So I thought that was really, really cool and an image that I had. And I like that you're heeding. You know, you're heeding this warning. You're saying, so listen to what I'm here to say. Like, you need to listen to me because some bad stuff is about to happen. And I thought it was wonderfully done. Yeah. Excellent.
Thank you.
Rack, what do you think? Thank you.
It reminded me a lot of, there was a movie, I don't know what year it came out, called The Warlock. The lore about that, it seems like when they wrote D&D, they took it from that legend and they gave, you know, the magician, the wizard, the warlock, all, you know, the powers of magic. And they didn't really go into where it came from, but the movie did go into where it came from. And they were hunting this guy and everything, and it was really a really good movie. I wish I remembered the name of the actor that was in it. And they had the that the Amish were in it, and the things that they paint on the barns. I forget the name of what you call them, the hex signs, and things like that.
pentagrams?
No, it wasn't a pentagram. No. They paint them. They call them hex signs, I believe. And they were supposed to ward off evil and things like that. There was reasons why, you know, they did things the way that they did them. And according to in the lore of this movie, one of the things that they did too that I thought was really fantastic, the guy who was hunting the warlock found his footprints in the dirt when he was coming after them. So he took a knife and he stabbed the footprints, and the footprints bled. And the guy started screaming from where he was trying to hide that the foot, you know, because he somehow mystically the footprint was connected to the warlock. It was fantastic. And the guy knew that he was being after a warlock because something happened. And he's like, you know, oh, the only reason a warlock needs fat is to cast this spell. And it was just, you know, a nature and a lore that's all tied together when you start talking about mystical things like that, and that's the canon that they kind of went by that D&D, I want to say, borrowed from, you know, because again it's all how you want to play the character, you know, I'll poke Pretty Bird and say and about your alignment, because you know if you're lawful good, you're not going to cast some of those spells. You know, it's an interesting concept, and you know, you laid it out well in the poem. You brought in the Halloween aspect of the cauldron and the magic that's involved in being a warlock, which, you know, when you hear words like that's what it invokes. I mean, you know, there's no mistaking what a warlock is. It's like, oh, he's talking magic, and you know, there's usually that connotation of evil attached to that, and then that brings to mind the whole darkness and I'm out to eat flesh and things like that. So yeah, you did a fantastic job with your piece, Hatter.
Thanks, Rick. Muted.
The sky is on mute. You're that pretty bird.
I'm here. I am assuming I'm next. Okay. Again, this has a very poetic feel to me, just the way the rhyme goes. And maybe it's because you rhyme differently in this than your standard rhyme, which I love. And your inner rhyme and outer rhyme and all the poetic things. But I have a magical question, actually, because in my warped sense of how things become things, to me, witches and wizards are very much, you are born with whatever innate abilities you're born with, and then you have the teachings to do the spells and the this and the that, yada, yada, blah, 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 where warlocks are very much tied to other beings, i.e. demons or whatnot, where they're not necessarily evil, but they are granted these gifts from beings greater than themselves. I mean, is that a fair statement, generally speaking?
I'm
sorry, what?
Yeah, warlock is a male witch, right? And everything that goes along with a witch, but a wizard is taught levels. No, that's not it.
A lot of people use the terms interchangeably, but in my understanding of like ancient lore of whatnot, it's a warlock. What, Rack?
No, I was going to expound on what you were saying, that one is not an innate ability. One, you know.
Right.
And you know, I'm going to bring it back and make Sky smile, bring it back to Star Wars, like, you know, the Force and the midichlorians, you know, that's one faction of the magic. But the warlock is like you said, he's given this gift. It's not an innate ability that he learned and honed. Like a magician or a wizard.
Yeah, that was most of mine. Because the Merlin always had an apprentice.
Merlin was a wizard.
Yeah, a wizard, right. And he was teaching a lesser wizard, a protege,
right.
to where a warlock was just an evil witch.
An apprentice.
Well, warlocks are granted their magic by other beings, by bonding, having basically selling your soul or whatever the nonsense. However you bond with whatever being, demon or not demon, is a being greater than yourself that gifts you these powers, and it can be taken away.
Okay.
Where if you are a witch or a wizard or whatnot, that you kind of can tap into things, and then you are taught how to use these, expound on them, grow them, and be stronger. I mean, I could be wrong, but this is how I understand things.
Say these words.
So what's more powerful, a warlock or a coven of witches? I mean, is there a level of...
Well, that all depends on who the warlock aligns with and what they seem fit to grant them with. Warlocks tend to be a lot more malevolent by nature, and they have more not nature-based things. Not that all witches and wizards do nature-based things, but they tend to have, like a fury is a, as far as imps go, a fury is, they're malevolent. They're a pain in the ass. They do bad things. It's not okay. But that's not to say all warlocks are inherently bad. It's just it matters whatever being is granting them their gift, that is going to
influence
to give you the groundwork. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Not to start off on a tangent. My bad. I talk a lot. I am so sorry that I keep on going sideways.
Okay.
I love
we're
this
going
poem.
Off air in like 30 seconds. I was just letting you guys. We're going off air in 30 seconds. But I'm really into the conversation. So I was totally just listening. Totally listening.
I was a part of that.
I keep on waiting for to correct me, Sky, because you are the knower of all things mythical.
Well, no. I mean, I said I was going with you. I don't think I even.
Oh,
I think I learned something from you. no, you were on a roll. I wasn't about to cut you off. I'm like, 90 seconds left. I'm like, be quiet, blog talk person. I'm trying to listen to pre-birds.
all right,
goodness.
Guys, listen. So here's the thing. We're out of time. I pulled over Deborah's for tomorrow. It is a D&D poem. However, she usually likes to read to me, so I need to figure out if she's calling in for that or not, and I'm just going to pull it over. So she'll have two tomorrow because she did drop one for the extreme, so I'll text her and figure out if she's calling or if she wants me to read it. I usually like to keep all my D&D stuff together, but it will just be on tomorrow's show. It's okay because I don't really want to read it if she's going to show up tomorrow. I do want to thank everybody who came to read. I do have one more. Pretty Bird, did you want to read any more?
I can. It doesn't matter. I'm good.
Okay, yeah. Let's close out with that. So, we're over. We're over time. So as long as we can read it, and then I can't go over more than 10 minutes, I don't think. Oh, my God. So thank you, AP, who called? I will say thank you to you, too. Oh, yes, okay. Thank you, Stephen, AP, Titus, and then we read somebody else, too.
JCA. Oh.
Who was in charge of this? Yes, thank you. Me, I'm in charge of it. JCA, Patter, and thank you, Rack and Pretty Bird, for hanging out with me the whole show and for engaging in such wonderful conversation and poetry. And Hatter, thank you for calling in.
Also. I see a Budro.
Huh?
Did I see a Budro?
Oh yeah. We're gonna have to save Dan for tomorrow. So yeah, I'm out of time.
Oh, okay,
and I
okay,
knew
okay.
and I knew that we were gonna pull over because I tend to talk a lot and people talk a lot during the D&D shows. because I play so many clips on the other shows. I really like this show just to be, so I wasn't even worried about it. And there were no poems dropped for The Sound of Music because apparently I'm the only one who loves that movie. So
I love that movie. I just didn't see it.
Fine. Well, no one wrote for it tomorrow, so it's fine that we're gonna put some of the poems on tomorrow, so I'll have some poetry tomorrow, so it's absolutely fine. And I was fine if I didn't have any poetry. I was just, me and Raph were just going to listen to music all night and be like, hey, that was a cool song. So it's fine. But I do want to close out with Pretty Bird, and I do have a closeout song. It's different from what I had planned, but you guys were like, well, not you guys, but us, me included, were like completely off the like rails and different subjects, which I love, by the way. So don't take it as a negative. So I changed my closeout song due to present company and present conversation. So I did change that out. So stick around for that. But I do want Pretty Bird to read the last one, and we'll do like a quick.
Am I reading my last one or one for somebody else?
You're reading your last one.
Yours.
I pulled everything out. I don't know where the heck it is.
I already put it down on the thing.
I'm just behind the times.
I put it down on the thing, apparently. No, I didn't do it. Let me see. I'll do it right now. Here we go. Right here.
Okay,
you got it.
I'm not crazy. It's fine. Okay.
No, it's me. Not you.
All right. This is Anymore. And it goes like this. I don't miss you anymore. The shadows are so engulfing that all I can do is throw words at them by the thousands and try to break free. Maybe my words will crack the sun open. Maybe I can pick them up off the floor and dry my tears. I can pretend that the shadows don't follow me, that they're not there as I walk on a sunny afternoon with my eyes open watching the rest of the world smile. I'm tired of pretending that I don't miss you. I don't miss the way you touched me while I was sleeping, the way your fingers would push my hair over my ear so you could watch my face. I don't miss you. I sit in silence listening to the sounds you used to make when you would make coffee before I would get up. I miss the smell of you on my sheets, but it's been so long that I don't even know what it is that I'm missing. I miss that smile that haunts my dreams because it's the only place that I know what happiness feels like. Felt like, but I go through every motion of every day with a smile on my face, hoping that one day if I paint it on hard enough, it'll stick. So again, I throw words at the world and I paint pictures that I can't possibly convey in the depths of which they are stabbing me. But if I pull the words out of my veins where you left them empty, it might kill me. I might bleed them all at once with no way to stop them. Your hand over my heart healed everything temporarily. And now I am diseased flesh with holes where feeling should be. I am the smell of lies and perfidy. I am everything I hate about you. So I can't miss you. If I miss the way you hurt me, I'll never be whole. If I miss the gaping wounds you left when you pulled your love out of my skin, what does that say about me? So I don't miss you. I don't miss you. It's not in the ink I plead with. It's not in the images in my head. It's not in my own reflection. I don't miss you anymore. End poem.
Moment of silence. So I'll catch our breath. Listen, I don't know why this isn't on my recommended list. And I always... when I see poems like this that are just so phenomenal, and I see my comment, like, I simply love your work, I realize that some people might be like, wow, that's a really crap way to leave a comment. But honestly, like, sometimes, like, it's because, really, no, I do, like, it's often a sign of you completely blew me away, and that's it. Like, this is just phenomenal, period. Like, I could pick it apart in a written comment, and I probably should. But sometimes when I'm done reading, I'm just like, or done listening, I'm just like, this is brilliant, you know, and that's it. And sometimes that's the highest compliment you could get, despite the fact where people are like, oh, there aren't a lot of words there. Well, because it's phenomenal. I don't know what else you want me to say, like in the little chat box. But I will say more words now. I thought this was just so wonderful. I love that you read it. I love the way that you read it. I'm not really sure why it wasn't on my recommended list. I don't think this is on my SoundCloud list, so I'm going to have to go put that over there. And I've got work to do. And there are so many pieces of this that were just breathtaking. Particularly, and not limited to, but I do have to limit some of them, otherwise I just read the whole poem, right? So particularly, and not limited to, the coffee and the sheets. I just, because it was so specific, and the idea of, like, and it's all those little things, right? When people are, like, the noise they make doing something, just knowing that somebody else is in the other room doing whatever they need to do and going about their day, and you're in a different room and you're just hearing them and you're just part of their existence, there's such a comfort to that, and there's such a familiarity of that when you're with someone, that when they're gone, you realize how quiet it is, and you're just like, oh, all those little sounds, that them just existing in my vicinity is there's a gap, there's something missing. So by you saying that, it just conveyed to me all those emotions and all those thoughts, and then of course the sheets, and then the idea of I don't even know what I'm missing. I don't even know what I'm missing right now. Like that, I'm like there. It's just. I love that part. I loved all the parts, but there was another part too that I want to. Where was it? Right here. This is the one. If I miss the gaping wounds you left when you pulled your love out of my skin, like it was so deeply sunk within there, it's literally pulling the love out of the skin, and I really loved that. I thought it was. Really well written and just wonderfully emotive, but the way that it was written, it was creative, and it was just very intense. I thought it was very, very, and like unique way of saying that. So definitely great poem. I told everybody they had to make a quick comment. Here I am going on. I love this one. I put it on my recommendation list. I'm not really sure why it isn't in there.
I have
love
trivia.
You've got trivia? Oh, my gosh.
Are you ready?
All right.
So I was in a little bit of a depressed state when I did this thing. And so I was sitting in the bathroom, not on an open toilet, but sitting in the bathroom. And I felt like I needed that addendum. And I was just sitting there. I had turned off the lights. I hit record on my phone. And I just blurted it out. And it took me forever to go old school friggin' trying to find lyrics on a tape. Trying to type all that out because I spoke so fast. But that original recording, unedited, and I just got rid of some of the gaps in between of just blank space because it was like blurb by blurb by blurb. But I didn't change any of the inflections, didn't change anything. That is me sitting in the dark without re-recording anything. And that's where I pulled the
lights
from.
It.
I didn't write it first.
Absolutely. Yeah, I if I'm driving and I think of something, I do on a recorder, but it's nothing like it's like a lot.
It's nothing like
nothing. Yeah, it's nothing like this. I'll tell you what. I mean, that's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. I'm gonna have to go listen to it after. Bracken Tour, what do you think?
You know, just starting with the title, Anymore. That reminds me of Poe's Nevermore. But you know, that aside, call it a condensation of a different thought. When you talk about getting over someone, that's not a very elegant way of putting it. But if you simplify it into the two words that you did, and you say anymore, and you go into what you did, it totally yanks the emotion. And pulls at your heart and just amplifies everything because it's so relatable, even to the point of the use of the tense. When you corrected yourself and in the poem and you went from present tense to past tense, I forget what line that was that you said that, but when you caught yourself in the description of it like that, it's like, you know, you forget when someone leaves to the point that, you know, it aches so much that it's like they're still there, and you have to remind yourself, oh, that's past tense, not present tense. And you know, again, that emotion and that feeling is carried through the whole thing in a brilliant, brilliant way. This is amazing. You know, again, fanboy. I just loved it.
Thank you.
Excellent.
That was a real catch,
and
too, by the way, in that recording. It was a very hard catch, so it's an emotional recording.
What's funny is that's the kind of thing that you would correct someone on if you were reading their poem. You'd be like, this should, you know, you.
In my head, I tend to let them do their thing in real life.
Yeah, okay. Tense agreement.
And this is why everybody should go on Pretty Bird Soundpod. Like, that's why I advocate.
I'm such a spokesperson. All right, Adder, you can make a comment.
Bird talking.
Yeah, Pretty Bird's got a way of writing, and I've tried to explain this before or describe it in my best. She's got a way of sitting beside you, telling you, reading the poem or telling you the story. Then she grabs you by the shoulders and shakes you a little bit, right? And then pretty much shakes you a little harder. Then she calms you back down. She does it every time. You can feel the pattern. I would try to do
so
it.
I
would be
see it more like
it.
The emotional battery.
My
that's
chest.
Awful.
I see it more like
shaking the shoulder. Hey, listen to me.
Yeah, I don't feel the gentle shaking, Hatter. I feel like a hand reaching into my chest and pulling out my heart, like they do in the Once Upon a Time series.
Same thing. Metaphor.
Reaching right in there, ripping it out. That would be more my analogy. I'm just by the end. I'm just like, oh my god.
Yeah, she's calming you down. You know, I sit in silence, listening to the sounds you used to make, and then by the time she says, "I miss your smell on the sheets, on the lips of the sheets," I miss that.
Do you know what? One thing that I admire that I just can't seem to do a lot. I mean, maybe it's my own years of, you know, moderating and maybe censoring my own feelings. I don't know. Maybe there's some, like, deep-rooted thing there. But the way that you read it so raw, no matter I try to do that in some of my poetry, and I just can't. I can't.
Yeah.
It's always leveled. And I try to make it not that way. But maybe it's like emotional stunt. It is like, I mean, like, I admire that. That's why I like spoken word, because people just, you know, they just let it all out there in their voice. You could hear it. And I'll listen to the recording and I'll be like, oh, my voice cracked too bad. Like, it's, and then I'll obsess over it. I'm just like, I can't do that. And to begin with, to even let go that much, it's just hard. It's hard to let yourself be so vulnerable when you're speaking these kinds of words. And I admire that you can do that. And I admire people that can do that, because it's harder than people think.
Oh, you do yourself
like
a disservice.
Yeah, it's not how you read,
a little something.
How you
I
read
know.
It, too. You have the voice that I feel like I'm in trouble.
I think there's only one poem that my voice kind of cracked, and I was really like, I almost had to stop reading the poem. I think there was only one poem that I couldn't finish like that. And I feel, and often your voice wavers like that in your reading, and it's real. And
you have a certain cadence. You have a certain cadence.
One poem
I
didn't think I was.
There are poems that I have written in deep emotional pain that to this day I cannot read.
All right.
One
quick thing before you go, because
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's your show. You do your thing.
Well, no, I was just going to tell you. I don't even know what I was going to tell you. I was going to tell you something about what you just said, but then I forgot. I was going to say, and then everybody makes you read those poems on your show. You said there are some poems that I just can't read, and then I said everybody reads those poems. That's all
that
I was going to say.
Everybody
that's
would
it,
be you,
it.
But that's okay. I love you anyway. I read my poems the way I feel, and I feel out loud. You feel a little bit more subtly, but when your emotion in your spoken word pieces is honest, it breaks me. Like, there was a poem you read on one of the last shows that I was on, it's been a while, that had me in tears just sitting here in silence, because it's so powerful. So you don't have to have
a strongly emotive projecting kind of thing, to be honest in the emotion, because you have to be true to who you are. Otherwise, you're just kind of playing to an audience that may or may not hear you. And that adds a little bit of theatrics to it, which you don't need, because the way you convey things when it is heartfelt, it's different than when you're telling a story.
Yeah.
And so it matters, and it's palpable, and it touches people. So while we are very different in how we, well, I'll say perform the poetry or read the piece, we're also very different in how we convey emotions in general. And so one is no more or less powerful than the other. So don't sell yourself short. You're awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, she talks softly and slows down, that's when it's just tearing your heart out.
Well, I never thought about it that way, but I do admire the way that you do your speak. All right, on that compliment,
thank you.
I'm getting all emotional. Thank you. You have to stay for the whole song because you have to talk about it at the end. I can't.
Okay.
You have to do it. Okay. So I'm going to get in trouble here. We're at 10:18. I'm still playing my song. Like I said, we went off track because, hey, it's my show and I can do what I want. So here we go.
Who's the most satisfied in my DeLorean? Words over on my piece of Mandalorian. Historian, some Star Wars historian. Deep in the bay, but they play at Pelican. Rhyme renegade, sure to penetrate first and second defense. I won't hesitate, got a devil do with Darth, the guy that delegates. Got something against Skywalker, somebody really hates. I don't give a. I'm at the solo, for all I carry, could be Han at Yoda's dojo. Gotta make the money, credit's no good when the Jawas run the shop in your neighborhood. Think you can cook, I got a grappling hook. Let's make this quick, cause I'm really booked. I'm a devious degenerate, defender of the devil. Chunk on all the trash compacted on the detention level. My backpack, got jet. Well, I'm Boba, I'm that fat. Well, I'm bounty hunt for Jabba Hutt. To find it, my bed. I kill it, deep face. A mask is over my face. Well, I deliver the prize, but I still narrow my eyes. Cause my time, I don't like to waste. Get down! I'm a question, rep inside Enigma. Get inside a slave one, find your home and signal. From Endor to Hoth, Ripley to Spock. I'll find what you want, but there's gonna be a cost. Say my name is Boba Fett. Okay. I'm acting right, yo, for the carbonite. Got telescopic sight, flame swords on my wrist. You still don't get the gist. Spike gets to make the kick, Hawk gets to make the hit. You think I give it? Your mama is a bitch. I see you in the Sarlacc pit. You just lit my switch, integrity's been dipped. You scratch it on my ear, you know I shoot the gift. I got Sabine and Secatina's way to lick my lefty lips. So I'll let you get back inside your little spaceship. Give you a head start, cause I'm a sporting con. Consider the starting line and seek a smile hot inside. Hope you have hyper drive. Pray to stay alive. Don't try to slip me five, cause I never take a bribe. To the beat of a different drummer. Let no man put us under or else we be put under as in 6 feet. Got an imperial fleet backing me up. Gonna blow up any attempt to defeat. They got a death star. Got four payments on my car. Handed over the hammerhead. At most I see bar. Used to carjack him. He's a bar back. Just go to show how you can get back on the right track. And for me that's not an option. Can't say that with more clarity. Me going legit would be like Jar Jar with therapy. My backpack got jets. Well I'm Boba.
Awesome. I hope you enjoyed. You're going to talk about it for like a minute, and then we got to close it out.
I love this song. MC Chris is like 5 foot nothing. That is his actual voice, even when he speaks. There is nothing like sped up about it. That's just his voice.
And I love this by all things. And I'm going to tell you, my favorite part of this and all of its Star Wars details that are fabulous, but my favorite part is way up here. Where is it? Because I had to pull up the lyrics because I had to talk about this part because I never remember what it is when it's not playing. It is da 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 da. It is from Endor to Hoth, Ripley to Spock. I'll find what you want, but there's going to be a cost. I love that he went full aliens. I love that he went Star Trek. I love that he went to the ends of the universe and went through time to do what he has to do as a job because, you know, his car's cold. You know, that is just awesome. And, you know, a little inappropriate details. The first time I ever heard this song was in Zach and Miri Make a Porno because they went all Star Wars for their, you know, for the movie. And this was the background song to their little montage for their you know, tape covers and whatnot. And it's absolutely hysterical. But I love this thinking song so bad, it's not even funny. Love this song. I mean, it's a little raunchy and whatnot, but I love the freaking tauntauns on the Autobot. Yes, please. It is just awesome.
Awesome. I'm glad I can make your night. I'm just, all the Star Wars talk, I'm like, I have to play this song. I kept it in the studio.
I love this song.
All right. Yeah. 25 minutes over. I'm going to get fired. Thank you guys all so much. I hope you have a wonderful evening. It's been fun.
Well, you too, Sky, and it was fun. A lot of fun. Tomorrow's the Sound of Music. Can I bring anything musically inclined, or does it have to be Sound of Music specific?
Yeah, it says you could write to any of the themes. Themes mean anything musically inclined.
From the Sound of Music?
Like bring me a poem. That's really all I care about. I'll bring all the other stuff. <It's> really. All right. I'm gonna press it. I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Thank you for using public radio.
It's now, Rick. It's now.